This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The tabling of Budget 2021 last Friday is still the biggest news story of the day, and something that we'll certainly be looking at in the weeks ahead as Parliament deliberates on the details. The budget is being tabled in unprecedented circumstances, one might say, as the parliamentary confidence in Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin remains to be proven, and support for the budget is the conventional barometer for that. For some thoughts on the political implications of the budget, we have P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant at the online news portal thevibes.com. Guna, always good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Let's start with, I guess, your overall impressions of the budget speech. Do you think it addresses what we need for Malaysia's economy to recover from the pandemic?
I think yes and no. The standard process for COVID-hit countries, which is basically the entire world, is to pump in money. So it was a rather expansionary budget, a giveaway budget, if you will. But it'll help push the economy up, but at what cost? And where are the funds going to come from? So those are the key questions. So if I can just run through some figures very quickly. Government expenditure is going up 17% to ringgit 323 billion, which is the highest ever allocation. 17% is a huge amount to go up by. Development expenditure is up almost 40% to 69 billion. Mm-hmm. And then you have a COVID-19 expenditure, which is a massive 17 billion. So the budget deficit will already be at 6% of GDP. The debt of Alpha at the end of 2019 was 793 billion, which was 52.5% of GDP. Remember, the ceiling now is at 60%. After it was raised at the recent parliament session. So, but the debt at the end of 2020, the projected debt at the end of this year, not even at the end of 2021, is 874 billion, which is already 60.7% of GDP, exceeding the limit already. These are figures from the economic report.
Right, right.
So where is the funding going to come from is the question, and that has not been explained. The Petronas dividends were 34 billion, and the safety net is coming down because the Petronas's cash reserves are coming down quite rapidly. I think it was over 100 million, but with these payments, it might come down into the sub 100 billion level. So there are no revenue generating measures which have been announced, no reintroduction of GST, for instance. And then on top of that, we have a big problem of leakage that's not been addressed. For instance, wage subsidies. Certainly companies which are doing very well, for instance, Top Glove and other glove manufacturers and so on, they employ a lot of workers, but technically they are still, all these companies which are still doing, they are entitled to wage subsidies. So shouldn't there be some kind of a process to weed out the companies which don't need this?
Mm-hmm. Do you know if the government actually keeps tabs of the companies that apply for wage subsidies? And do we know if there's a database of who actually receives them and who doesn't?
Right now, as it is from my speaking to some CFOs and things like that, they say that the entire thing is basically blanket. So if you have workers who fall under the category, you get it and it's given to you. You're talking about hundreds and thousands of companies this way. So it's not going to be an easy process to actually be monitoring these things. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the situation in the US where a lot of people were disputing the loans that were given out to companies, where you had huge companies like the big fast food chains also getting those benefits as opposed to the smaller companies. So it's a similar situation here, actually.
Yes, yes. So I think it's one thing throwing money, to push up economic growth. It's another to actually channel it to the people who need it the most. The challenge is that. And I think they should have announced some measures in the budget to explain that. The problems will come to roost post 2021. So 2021, as you remember, 17% increase in government expenditure, biggest ever government expenditure. This is not sustainable. It's unsustainable because you do not know where the revenues are going to come from to finance these budgets. You could almost say that it's an election budget, huh? Because remember, PM Tan Sri Muhyiddin has said that he would like to see an election soon, and mm-hmm. an election could be held mm-hmm. If the COVID-19 pandemic did not pose a threat. I think right. he said this in an interview with Bernama. So in the event that there is an election between now and the next budget, then it certainly will be an election budget as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that raises a good point. And so looking at the different allocations, how do you see the government trying to appease all the different political stakeholders, especially within its own coalition, I suppose, given that the Perikatan National Government itself is quite fractured internally?
I think basically they have made a lot of allocations to different areas, you know, and so on, and they have been very generous with the handing out of money. You know, so as far as that is concerned, the handouts have gone left, right, center, and everywhere else. You know? So that would appease a lot of people, generally speaking. And then on top of that, I think they have 4.6 billion allocation to develop Bumiputra entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. which is actually a very it's a place where you can hand out a lot of patronage here. See, and then if you look at the allocations, they have made allocations which are a lot smaller. Say for 170 million for Chinese community mm-hmm. development. And ringgit 100 million for Indian community development. So the trust is still to go for the Malay votes, you know? And this is obvious in the huge allocation of 4.6 billion for Bumiputra entrepreneurs compared to a much smaller allocations for the Chinese and the Indian community.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not surprising that there are these large allocations for the Bumiputra community, given the political base that the government is relying on. But I do think it will raise longstanding questions about the government's commitment to inclusivity when it comes to economic prosperity and the question of who deserves to get what largesse.
Yes, yes. They have also given, I think, an allocation to a group which is considered to be a lobby group, I think JASA, I think that was highlighted in the news, of quite a substantial amount when the previous government had actually stopped allocations to this body.
Mm-hmm. And JASA is, of course, the Special Affairs Unit, which I think in the prior Barisan National Administration was under the Prime Minister's Department and has now been reintroduced under the Ministry of Communication and Multimedia, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Just to flag that, I saw those headlines, and I don't think this was announced in the speech of the finance minister itself. That detail wasn't there, but this is something that you can glean if you look through the individual budget allocations or proposed budgets for the individual ministries.
And it may be in the appendices to the budget, now, so which gives a more detailed breakdown mm-hmm. of how the budget is being allocated.
Right. And it's important to note, right? The speech is one thing. The speech sort of puts forth the highlights that the government wants the public to see. But there are a lot of details in the footnotes and in the indices, which if you don't really go through, you're going to miss a lot of things. And I think this 81 million ringgit allocation to JASA is one such detail. Mm. Can we talk a little bit about the proposals of the opposition? Because we know that in the days leading up to the budget, Pakatan Harapan had come up with a six-point proposal for a unity budget. How much of their proposals have been incorporated as far as you can see?
Well, the extension of the loan moratorium was not done, but that's really not necessary. And I really did not understand why Harapan was pushing for that. You know, because I think the finance minister also said that 85% of people are not asking for an extension of the moratorium. So the moratorium, in fact, helps the banks because it basically extends the tenure of the loans. It's not as if interest is suspended. So you still have to pay outstanding interest on the principal amount. You have to pay the interest on the principal amount, on the outstanding principal, even if the loan is extended. You know? So it's like the banks get an extension of the loan and therefore get an extended period for which they receive interest payments. And so it's actually positive for the banks, you know, so long as the borrowers repay the banks.
So you don't agree with the loan moratorium extension, and this hasn't been granted in the budget. I think what the government has given is they've given a targeted extension for B40 borrowers and micro enterprises. So it's this very small group that can ask for an extension of up to 3 months, if I'm not mistaken, 3 or 6 months. So it's very limited. What other proposals have or have not been included?
If you're talking about unity budget proposals, for instance, I think the essentially there has got to be a process of dialogue back and forth. You make your proposals, they study the proposals, and then you talk about it again and things like that. It's got to be a continuous engagement. It's meaningless when you have just one brief discussion about all of these proposals and then you call it a unity budget. That's basically more for show than anything else. And I think a lot of this was largely done because the king, the Agong himself, had urged that that people come together and pass the budget proposals. So this is more like a show towards that end rather than anything else. I don't think there was enough time to do a meaningful consultation.
Right, because
for the budget.
That is true. I think the only reports that we had of an actual consultation between the opposition and the government was on November 1st when they met with the finance minister and actually put forth those 6 proposals. And barely a week later, we have the budget speech in front of us. So I suppose engagement, the government's engagement with all political stakeholders, that's something that remains in question, whether enough engagement was actually done. I'm speaking to P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant at thevibes.com. After these messages, we discuss what might happen next in Parliament. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, I'm Shazana, and if you've just tuned in, this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. Joining me on the show is P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant with online news portal The Vibes, and we're of course discussing Budget 2021. Guna, there were a lot of initiatives announced in the budget to help Malaysians who've seen their household incomes shrink due to the economic slowdown. Was there any one proposal that grabbed your attention?
One thing I was not particularly happy about was the EPF withdrawals. That has been extended for another year, which is $500 per month or $6,000 a year. So this is a serious drain on future savings, for people who would need these savings very badly in future. So they are basically encouraging the very people who need to have savings to spend at this point of time. So this was one of the things actually that UMNO had asked for and which they seem to have acceded to. They seem to be acceding more to some of UMNO's requests.
Right.
And UMNO are basically partners in the PN government. The other thing is also they have not restored the employee contribution back to 11%. If you remember, it was reduced to 7% earlier this year because of COVID. And from next year, it will become 9%, which is, it's better, but it's still not back up to the 11%, which was the employee's contribution before. So again, this reduces as the effects of reducing savings in the future. And basically, they are using people's own savings to stimulate the economy, which I think is not the right thing to do.
Right. As you said, UMNO was the one who put forth this proposal for people to be allowed to withdraw from their EPF 1 account. So would you say that this proposal was made under the guise that this would help the people actually in giving them more cash, essentially, like a place to get money for those who are strapped of income? Do you think this proposal is actually disingenuous, because you're essentially giving short-term, maybe relieving short-term pain, but in the long term, you will have consequences.
Yes, and you see, the thing is, you are using people's savings to stimulate the economy. So if you are being so expansionary and if you are giving so much of benefits to, say, corporates and things like that, maybe what the government should do is to give some kind of, they are already doing that, but they can increase the subsidies that they provide to the lower income group. So there is no need to actually have this blanket $500 per month withdrawal for anybody who wants to withdraw it from ETF. The tendency for people, if they are given given avenues to spend money, is for them to spend it, especially those in the lower income group.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a good idea. I think if the government wants to help,
mm-hmm.
you increase the amount of subsidy that you give to these people. You know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to happen next, Guna? I mean, given that the budget is seen as a de facto confidence motion, do you think that we're going to see the opposition mount a challenge during the debate stages in the weeks ahead?
It's something which is very fluid, and really, it's very difficult to predict whether they would actually block the budget. I think there is. I feel personally that it's there could be an outside chance of it. But the thing is, what will be the end game if you do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right, you say you topple the Mohyuddin government, perhaps, you know, if enough people vote against the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the next thing that happens? Clearly, UMNO and Mohyuddin won new elections,
mm-hmm.
but that may have to be deferred until the COVID-19 pandemic. And the way things are going, it doesn't look like Harappan and UMNO can cobble together enough people to actually take over from Mohyuddin and form a new government,
mm-hmm.
which will avoid elections. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we are within a rock and a hard place. You know? if you don't pass the vote of confidence, mm-hmm. you have a backdoor government which is continuing. And if you pass it, you may have another government which may not reflect the aspirations of the people when they voted in the last 2018 elections.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think that the political costs will be heavier perhaps for the opposition if they fail to support the budget, especially given that the king himself, as you said, has commanded for all sides to work together and find a compromise?
All right. If you look at the recent situation, well, we know that PM Mohyuddin wanted an emergency, and he did everything possible to engineer an emergency when most people think that an emergency, including the royalty through the Rulers Council,
mm-hmm.
thought that an emergency is not the right thing to do at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, Mohyuddin's popularity must have been affected, you know, and his standing with the people, generally speaking, should have been lower than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
But if the opposition currently then tries to move a motion to defeat the budget, then it's likely that many people would think of it as needless destabilization
mm-hmm.
of the government at a time when some sort of stability seems to be emerging, you know,
mm-hmm.
without the need to impose an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it could be negative for them, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like you said, it's a rock and a hard place for all of us, really. Guna, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. It's always great to hear from you. I've been speaking to P. Gunasegaram, editorial consultant at the online news portal, The Vibes. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up, and then it's over to Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.